Hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/firstcut. That's ZipRecruiter.com/firstcut. Playoff time, final rounds. Kyle Porter here on the First Cut podcast with Kyle Porter. That's Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. This is a fun time because the BMW sets the stage. We've got 70 golfers here. Then that cut will go from 70 to 30 for the Tour Championship at East Lake. And after a week off, everything is refocused. Kyle, how was your weekend away from golf? Do you feel recharged and re-energized for this next little stretch of golf, which includes also, and we will be previewing here on the show, the President's Cup. But how you feeling?
I'm good. I do feel a little re-energized. You know, it was, I think it was like 37 weeks in a row with a PGA Tour event. And then last week, and some of those weeks, you had two of them, obviously, with the opposite field events. And then, obviously, last week, they took a little time off. And, yeah, it was good. You know, I think it's obviously good for the players, and people don't really care about those of us who cover it. But it's nice for us, too, that we can enjoy college football and reintroduce ourselves to our families, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, it was fun to have a week off. But I'm excited about, you know, these final two events. There's a lot of kind of different storylines that are going to unfold over the last two or three weeks. And then the President's Cup is always, it's not usually very dramatic, but it's usually pretty fun. I think this team, this year's U.S. team in particular, will be really fun and interesting, just even as sort of a preview of sorts of next year's Ryder Cup. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
It's a preview of next year's Ryder Cup, and it's a chance to see this group of stars that have been rising up. You know, a lot of first-time players in like the most fun format to watch golf, the team golf, the whole weekend of the competition.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you've got a lot of, I can't remember off the top of my head how many rookies are on the U.S. team, but Justin Thomas will be and this is rookies not to the President's Cup, but to either the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup.
Daniel Berger. So
any team event. So it's Berger, Thomas, Kisner, Charlie Hoffman. Koepka's not a rookie. He was on the Ryder Cup team. I think there's one other that I'm forgetting. Oh, Kevin Chappell is a rookie. So not all those guys are young guys, but Thomas and Berger in particular, I think are exciting when you think about kind of the future of Ryder Cups and President's Cup President's Cups in the future.
All right. Number of BMW storylines I want to get into, including a course that moves around, your picks to win, your top 10 locks, looking at the top of the field and how we think that's going to shake out. But I got to jump straight into something because friend of the podcast, Sean Martin, friend of Kyle Porter, you guys are plugged into the same wavelength, and I think that there's more around the golf community, the golf Twitterati that are. He's got Patrick Cantlay as his projected champion, number 41 in the FedEx Cup standings. You've got him as your sleeper this week. What am I missing on Patrick Cantlay?
We've talked about this. You know my thing. I always go back to pedigrees. He's got a great pedigree. Played at UCLA, won a ton in his junior and amateur career. I think he won a lot. I don't know how many events he won at UCLA, but he was a stud. He was I think he was low am at the Masters, I want to say, in like 2011 or 12. He got into that while he was still at UCLA. He's got a great pedigree. And, you know, it was interesting. I was reading Jordan Spieth was asked about Cantlay last week, and he said that dude's a future top 10 player in the world. That was just his opinion. I don't think he was he wasn't like saying that it was going to happen, but he was just saying, I feel like he's a top 10 guy. And he's just somebody that, He doesn't play a lot.
Like, yeah, I was going to say 11 events. Only 11 events this year, which compared to like the rest of the, you know, most of the FedEx Cup standings, you're seeing like 25, 21, 22 events. But like 11 is less than Henrik Stenson's 14 or Sergio's 15.
Yeah, which is pretty crazy. He's been injured a lot throughout kind of the early part of his career. He had obviously a back injury for a long time. He's had an ankle injury, I believe, this year. But he's a stud. I mean, if you watch him just from a ball striking perspective, I don't know what his strokes gain stats are, but he is he's very much in the conversation with the Daniel Bergers and the Brooks Koepkes, and Justin Thomas has kind of risen above that a little bit this year, but he's kind of a forgotten guy among those guys. But I don't know if he played more. I mean, it's hard to say, because you could say, well, if you played 38 times a year, well, you'd probably fall off a little if you played 38 times a year. But I think that if he is able to stay healthy and put in a full schedule, I think he's got a chance to be a really good player for a long time.
T10 at the Northern Trust, T3 at RBC Heritage, runner up at the Valspar, and strokes gain stats, not enough to join the rankings.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, listen, this is a tournament that moves around a little bit. What are you expecting from the course this weekend?
Yeah, that's a good question. By the way, Cantlay is 1.18 strokes gain tee to green, which is pretty good. I don't know where that would place him if he had enough rounds to qualify, but that's pretty solid. Conway Farms is going to be a birdie festival, birdie bonanza.
Are we talking like John Deere kind of scores here?
Yeah. I mean, not quite. I mean, John Deere is like kind of on it, kind of in a category of its own, but
but we could see 20. 20 could be the winning level to par score here.
Yeah, I think 22 won it in 2015, Jason Day. I believe it was 22 under. 2013, Jim Furyk shot 59 here. And so, yeah, you're going to see there's going to be some low scores. And it's going to be fun. You know, I really like that the BMW moves around quite a bit. You know, they played it at Cherry Hills a few years ago. I believe Billy Horschel won it there. They played it at Crooked Stick, which is obviously where John Daly won the 1991 PGA Championship. They played it there, I believe, last year when DJ won it. So I like that. I think it's fun when a tournament moves around like that, sort of like a major championship. But yeah, it's back at Conway Farms. It'll probably be the lowest scoring event of the playoffs. I don't need every event to be 22 under as the winner, but it is fun when it happens. And especially when you get essentially the 70 best guys on the PGA Tour this year teeing it up to try to get to Eastlake for 10 mil.
Is this the no cut, or is it only next weekend that's no cut?
No, I believe it's no cut this week because they wouldn't really have anything to cut it down to. So, yeah, you'll see. It's actually kind of weird because the first 2 days they started at not until like 10 a.m., and then on the weekend, they have to start early. It's one of the rare tournaments where they start earlier on the weekend than they do on weekdays, because you go from threesomes down to pairings, but everybody's still in the mix. So it's kind of an oddity like that.
Do we see times where because of that, like, massive moves can be made at a place that's scorable, where they – normally, when you tell me about a tournament that is going to have a winning score that's, you know, 22 or 21 under, that, you know, if you go out there and shoot even par, then you could be in trouble. But at a course where Jim Furyk shot a 59, is that one of those where, like, you're not even going to have a good idea of what the top 10 is going to look like until late in the day on Saturday?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that makes it fun, because, like, you know, at any course you play, anybody can go out and shoot like one over, right? Like, it just happens. Like, you're just off, you play terribly, whatever. But at somewhere like that, it feels like you get a wider variation of scores. That's probably not actually true. Like if you look at the variation of scores at across events, it's probably the same at most places. But it feels like it here because your lower end is really low. It's 60s, 61, 62s. And then your high end is like 3 over par or 4 over par or whatever. I don't totally know what I'm trying to say with that, but essentially, like, let's say you shoot 2 under on the first day, you're like, how am I going to get to 20?
Right.
Know? Well, you can go out and shoot a 60 on the second day, and then all of a sudden the path to get to 20 under is pretty easy. So that makes it super exciting for me because you see all these guys who are playing really well, like Justin Thomas and DJ and those guys, they can shoot 61 at any point right now, you know, especially on a course like this. So I'm excited about that, and it should make for an exciting weekend.
Do you think that we'll see someone other than one of the top, let's say, 6 or 7 players come out and win this thing?
Not really. I mean, they've so thoroughly dominated the first two events. It's hard to imagine anything other than that continuing to happen. You know, we talked about this, I think, last week, but between DJ, JT, Spieth, and John Rahm, 3 of those guys have finished in the top 5 in the first two events, and the winner has come out of that group in each of the first two events. I don't really see a reason that's going to change this week or next week, really, at the Tour Championship. You know, it could happen. It's probably even likely that it will happen, but just from my perspective, it's difficult to envision it happening.
We've kind of wrapped up in our last show. I think we were talking about Justin Thomas as the player of the year. Is that something that at this point you even still work through your head? Like if Dustin Johnson were to win this, then win at Eastlake and win the FedEx Cup, does he all of a sudden take that mantle from JT?
If who did it, Dustin Johnson?
Yeah.
The no major
bid. I've just won more than anyone, and I won the playoffs.
I think Spieth is the only guy, because if DJ wins the next, let's say DJ wins the next two, so he would have won 3 of the 4 playoff events, and he'd have 6 wins, which is would be one more than Thomas. I think Thomas's major is too much for DJ to overcome. Now, I do think if Spieth wins the next two and he's got the Open, what would that put him at? 5 wins total. So he matches Thomas and wins the FedEx Cup and won the Open Championship. I think that would do it. But I think he has to win the next two. I don't think winning one of them will get it done. So in my mind, it's pretty much over unless Spieth just loses it over the next 2 weeks and just burns the whole thing down.
Which would be very entertaining. Like, I'm here for it.
Oh yeah.
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem is I don't know if I see it. I don't think I can project that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, you can obviously see him winning Eastlake because he's done that before, but just to, and part of it is because, you know, it's almost impossible to finish in the top 5 in all 4 playoff events, and he's already done it twice. And so you're like, is he really going to do that, you know, in, like, I think one of those top guys will win or come close to winning, but is it really going to be Spieth in all 4 of them? Like, it's just, that kind of consistency at the very top is so difficult. But I mean, he's kind of made an early career out of surpassing people's expectations. So I it could happen, but it seems pretty unlikely.
All right. Gonna get into your official picks for this here in a second. But of course, you know that this First Cut podcast with Kyle Porter is it's all about teamwork. We call each other up. We talk about college football for a little bit, then we get into, you know, the meat of the PGA Tour, and that kind of team can only come together with the right decision making from an employer. And if you're an employer and you're hiring right now, then you might not have enough time to go and search out the best candidates. But That's why ZipRecruiter is the best option for you. See, ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Think about how much time that saves. See, their powerful technology brings candidates to you. It brings them to you, and you are able to sort them out and rate them and manage them all with one easy-to-use dashboard. You don't have to juggle emails. You don't have to worry about calls. Everything is done through ZipRecruiter. See, in fact, only even 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within one day. So find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. So listeners of the First Cut podcast can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/firstcut. That's ZipRecruiter.com/firstcut. One more time, try it for free today. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/firstcut. All right, two-part question because I know your answer and I want to dissect it, but I've got a follow-up. So your winner prediction for the BMW is?
Dustin Johnson.
And is he your pick to win the FedEx Cup at this point?
I think I'm sticking with Fowler.
Sick.
I'm gonna ride Fowler all the way to the
sick.
End.
Sick. So Fowler needs to finish like second or third probably to finish in the to be in the top five going into East Lake, right?
I think so. The math is
come on, Sean.
Math is hazy at this point, but yeah, he can surpass. Who's directly ahead of him? John Rahm and Hideki Matsuyama. He can surpass. I think he has to finish second, third, maybe fourth, depending on what those guys do. But he's got to be pretty high up there.
All right. Well, let me play this out on the DJ train. What do you think winning the FedEx Cup, finishing the year strong, do you think that changes the way that we view Dustin Johnson and his current trajectory and where he stands among, you know, the alphas in golf and sort of his positioning moving forward, being, you know, several years senior to this crop that he's competing with right now?
I don't think it changes it. I mean, he's a guy that I expect to win the FedEx Cup at some point, you know, like he wins so much that it just feels a little bit like an inevitability. I do think your point about him being older, like it's kind of weird, right? Like he's almost like you've got your late 30s group of stars of like the Justin Roses and Sergio Garcias of the world, the Henrik Stenson. He's in his 40s, kind of this older group of a lot of really European stars. And then you've got your younger guys, like your I would say Jason Days and younger, like the 30 to 25.
And like is Ricky at 28?
Yeah, Ricky's at 28, Rory's 28, like that kind of group. Spieth is and JT are almost 20, you know, I would include them in that because they're almost 25 years old. So kind of that mid to late 20s group. And then you've got like the mid 30s. It's like DJ.
Yeah.
And I don't have the world rankings in front of me, but it feels like he's sort of age wise kind of by himself. You know, I'm looking at the top, the top 20 in the world. Alex Noren is there, but I wouldn't consider him like a star or a superstar, really. Kuchar is late 30s. Paul Casey's late 30s. It's kind of weird, right? Like he's like the only one between like 30 and 35 that is really, you know, Adam Scott is I guess you could throw him in there, although he's outside of the top 20 in the world right now. But it is kind of weird in terms of like the way the ages break down. He's sort of on his own, and I don't know what that means for his future or his game or whatever. But I do think that when we think about these guys, he's probably got a longer runway than your Sergios and guys like that, just because he's still, what is he? I think he's 30. DJ's like 33 or so. So he's got a long time to continue to be great. I think he could get to 20, 25 wins, a couple more majors, something like that, as long as he is as long as he continues on the trajectory that he's on right now.
But that's it's still, you know, like he's 33, who, because of his athletically arrogant swing and body and, you know, regiment and routine and the grilled chicken and spinach and the private chef and working out all the time, like, because of that, you know, he might have a longer runway than the average 33-year-old. But I mean, we're also talking about Father Time here. Like, I'm fascinated to see if, like, it doesn't seem like, because of the way, because of his physical, because he's a physical specimen, you don't think of him as someone who's in their mid-30s. But it's, I wonder if that's going to ever sort of, like, twist the way that we, because we don't group him in with the older players, and we do, for right now, have him probably skewing younger than he actually is. I don't know, man. I think that go ahead.
Here's the thing about DJ. Like, you see guys in their mid to late 30s sometimes fall off. Like, Hunter Mahan's a good example, right?
Yes.
And there are innumerable reasons that this happens. A lot of it is, it could be anything. It could be family related. Like, you just want to spend more time with your family. You don't want to practice as much. You've made all the money. You don't really care. Like, the two things that I think DJ has going for him is, I don't think he really does or cares about anything else. Like, I think this is just, like, his thing. Like, is DJ going to retire and, like, start a, like, you know, be Kobe and, like, start a business? Like, that's not going to happen. And the second is that he's been doing this for the last 3 or so years with a family, like with his life as it will probably be in the next 5 to 10 years. So it's not like there's this big change that is necessarily coming for him. Maybe stuff happen. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but he's been doing it at a really high level for the last 2 or 3 years in the same sort of setting that he will probably be in for the next 5 to 8 to 10 years. So I don't know. Like, both of those things, I think, should be encouraging if you're a DJ fan, that this is going to continue on for quite a while.
So Bubba's 38. And you talk about Bubba and interest sometimes. I would not be surprised if DJ at 38 is maybe given those Kepka lines, talking about getting fired up for the majors and everything else. It's just out there, you know, a day getting the cuts in.
Yeah, maybe. I just, what is he going to do? Like, Bubba, like, owns, like, a minor league team. He owns a candy store. Like, he's, you know, like, he just does weird Bubba stuff. Like, what is DJ going to do? Like, go play hockey? Ice hockey?
Baseball. Tebow. Timmy Tebow coming from the golf scene. The St. Lucie Mets are about to get Dustin Johnson on the mound. Throwing heaters.
That'd be great. I'd love it. Good for the content. Who knows? Like, I think DJ is sort of a unique individual in that I don't know how many guys like him there have been in golf, if any, ever, both from a mental and physical standpoint. So we don't really have, I feel like a prototype of what DJ is on any level. And I think the end of his career is going to be really interesting. Like, how long can he keep up that advantage that he has off the tee? You know, like, how long will his body hold up to be able to do that? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it's going to be interesting to find out.
Who do you think has a better finish this week, Spieth or Thomas?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess Spieth. He's just with Thomas. Like, obviously his sixth gear is just so impressive. I don't trust him on a consistency level like I trust Spieth. But he could also win the tournament. So I don't know. I'll say Spieth though.
Spieth. Can you talk me into believing that Hideki's gonna come in here and show a spark and make himself part of the conversation? Because I find myself not including him the way that the ranking should have him included in this group, particularly the way he was playing going into the playoffs.
Yeah, isn't it weird with Hideki? Like, if Spieth is not playing well, everybody's like, man, what's Spieth doing? Like, where's he at this week? And then, like, if Hideki doesn't play well, like, you don't even, like, think about it.
Yeah.
Like, you're 2 weeks later, you'd be like, I don't know what Hideki's been doing. Like, he's been missing cuts. Like, it is odd that when he's at the top, you're like, oh, wow, yeah, Hideki's, like, the third best player in the world. And then when he doesn't play well, you forget about him. I don't know. I think that I can't remember what he played pretty well last time out at TPC Boston. I saw something about him struggling on the greens at the Northern Trust. They were a little bit different. So I don't know. I think he's going to play all right. I don't, Hideki rides these really hot heaters for a couple weeks, and then he kind of goes away for a little bit and then comes back and whatever. So he's kind of I find him to be a lot more difficult to predict than a lot of guys. So I don't know. I'm not feeling it coming in, but who knows? I mean, he could obviously go out and win the tournament.
You talk about some of the interesting storylines. There's big names along the cut list. Who of that group, maybe outside the top 30 right now, that you think are going to be able to put together a good four rounds of golf and be able to move up in the list and secure a spot at Eastlake?
Patrick Cantlay, of course.
At 41. We've already mentioned him. Yes, that's true.
I guess probably Phil. You know, Phil is, what is he, 36th?
Yeah, 36.
Sergio's 34th. I think either one of those guys. The Phil thing, like his whole deal at the Dell Technologies was kind of odd. Like the mystery illness that he wouldn't disclose, and like, but he has more energy than he's had in years, and I don't know. Like that whole thing was, I think Phil like sometimes just has to like talk himself into playing well. And I'm not saying that he didn't have anything wrong, but he is he's kind of psychological in that way. So I guess him, just because he played so well at the Dell Technologies. I think Rory would have to like win the tournament or come close to it to get into that top 30. Which, by the way, I just looked up strokes gained tee to green. Patrick Cantlay, 13th, would be 13th on the PGA Tour if he had enough rounds. You know who would be third?
Rory.
Or who is third? Yeah, Rory.
Yeah. No, but doesn't he not have enough? Does he have enough to qualify?
Well, he kind of bounces in and out, but right now he does have enough to qualify. Doesn't it not feel like he's been third on the PGA Tour in strokes gained tee to green this year?
I don't know, man. That's kind of one of your anchors, Kyle. Like, you've told me and you've shared on Twitter where Rory would be. That's how I knew that.
Yeah,
you're right. Weird. It's a very good point. But I think that you've gotten me too tuned into it already. like that's what I'm saying. Did you know that Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas were friends? Is Kyle Porter saying, did you know where Rory ranks tee to green right now?
That's so good. He's also T128 in putting. So here's the thing, that Chip, like, this is going to be, as you just noted, this is going to be one of my number one storylines going into 2018, is that people are going to be like, you know, Rory is whatever, like, he doesn't care, he's not good, or I don't know what people are going to say. But if you, like, the thing that doesn't change is ball striking. Like, yeah, guys are either great ball strikers or they're not. And I think if you're a Rory fan, like, and you look at his ball striking from this year, you have to say, like, you have to be encouraged about next year and into the future. It's not like he's 111th in ball striking. That would be concerning. That would be like, oh my gosh, like, this is not good. This is going downhill. But the top three are DJ, Spieth, and Rory. And those are the, you know, three of the best players in the world. And I just think that, you know, and he's talked about this, he's got to tighten up his wedges and become a better putter. And if he's able to take some time in the off season to do that, I think he's going to have a really big 2018. I know that's shocking that I think Rory's going to have a big 2018.
It's all right. I'll take Kyle banging his strokes gained tee to green stats in my head over somebody swooping in. What's it called? They always blame the national writers for doing this in college football, just swooping in and just pasting a very like widely read story about somebody with a whole bunch of generalizations. Like, somebody parachutes in to just fire off some Rory hot takes about how he's lost it. Like,
get out of my timeline.
Block. All right. Who's your top 10 lock?
Paul Casey. Paul Casey's had a really good year. 8 top 10s this year, a couple of top 5s in the first 2 playoff events. For some reason, he can't buy a win, but he's been really consistently inside the top 10. So, I'm in on Paul Casey this week.
And you mentioned Cantlay as your sleeper. You're sticking with Ricky as the player to win it all, riding that all the way.
Yep.
McIlroy needs to win the thing. John Rahm.
John Rahm.
Expectations?
He had the pleasure of playing with playing the Pro-Am today with Chris Solomon of No Laying Up.
Oh, my gosh.
So, by the way, John Rahm, I brought this up to some buddies. John Rahm, fewest number of Twitter followers in his group today.
Between Solly and...
It was him, Solly, Brian Urlacher, and one of the Bachelor contestants, Ben Higgins.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. So I was looking at all their followers, and Rahm needs to pick it up. Not good. But no, he's...
Is John Rahm at least tuned in to the awareness of No Laying Up?
I don't know. I could be swayed either way on that. He might be like all in, or he might just like not care about it at all. You know?
Silly American bloggers.
Yeah, exactly. No, with Rahm, I thought it was really interesting. He said this, I think it was after the second round at Dell Technologies when he was leading. He said that he almost outpaced his own expectations for himself so much that in the middle of his season, he was like, I don't know where to go from here. And so he kind of like insinuated that he lost focus and he was just kind of like wandering around, you know, because he wins Farmers. He almost wins Colonial. He wins in Ireland at the Irish Open. And so he said it took a couple of months of like, hey, I need to reset my expectations, figure out what I want to achieve, and then get there. I thought that was really interesting because it gave some really good insight into the way that the PGA Tour players function. Like, they need goals that they can achieve and accomplish. And because Rahm had kind of overstepped his own goals for himself, he didn't have anything to focus on. So he didn't really know like what to do. I know that sounds dumb, but it actually makes sense.
Is that like when you surprise yourself with a fast start when you're playing golf and then all of a sudden you get panicky?
I think so.
Like you've got your goal of what you want to shoot across 18 holes, all of a sudden you get on a quick hot streak and you start counting up like, oh my goodness. Oh no. What's going on?
It usually goes badly for me after that.
Right. Always. Because
you're
supposed to take it one event at a time. And when you try and go big picture, you all of a sudden you get lost, you get distracted.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly what it's like. So yeah, I think that, his first 2 playoff events, he's been top 5 in both of them, I believe. And he's been playing great again. So I just think that he is I think he's going to be a mainstay in the world top 10 for the next however many years. I don't know if he's going to win the FedEx Cup this year, but he could. He's in the top 5 right now.
Yeah, so, giving himself a chance.
Yeah, we'll see.
All right. He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him on Twitter at KylePorterCBS. Kyle, do you have more Twitter followers than John Rahm?
I don't.
Oh.
I think I'm getting closer, though. So,
all right, let's get Kyle more Twitter followers than John Rahm. Go follow Kyle Porter at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Okay, Chip. We'll talk to you later.